Thanks for attending the Madison Food Policy Council meeting on Wednesday, August 20th, 2025. This meeting is being held virtually and is also being recorded per Madison General Ordinance 33.01, Section 12. Please adhere to the virtual meetings etiquette by doing the following. All Food Policy Council members, please keep cameras on during the meeting. Community members, guests, and staff, please keep cameras off during the meeting unless speaking. And all attendees, please keep mics muted unless called upon by the chair after raising your hand virtually. Those of you calling in can use star 6 to mute and unmute in the Zoom platform, and star 9 to raise your hand. So that's calling the meeting to order. And first item is to look back to July 16th minutes and approve them. Can I get a motion to approve? After which we'll have any edits if anyone has them. Take your time as you should look over them first. Nan?
Just raising my hand to note my abstention because I was absent for the meeting.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Eddie?
I'll move to approve them.
Okay, can I get a second?
I can second.
Thanks, Noah. That's Heidi motioning, Noah seconding. Any edits? Seeing no hands for that, I will assume unanimous consent on the approval of those meetings unless I see a hand calling for a roll call vote. Seeing no hands, those minutes are approved. Thanks. Sorry about, I'm adjusting my windows so I can see everything and everyone. Sorry about the delay on that, but the next item is there any public comment?
No public comments tonight.
Okay, I think we're not voting on anything, but anyone feel a need to disclose or recuse anything? Seeing nothing there, are there any items of new business? This is where you'd bring up things that you want to discuss in the future. So not today, but things to discuss in the future. And I have Nan.
Thanks, Nicholas. I do have an item of new business tonight, and it comes from the Farmland Preservation Task Force. We're working through our list of recommendations. This one is about recommending that the city adopt the EPA's guidelines for gardening on former brownfields. I'm gonna just say a little bit about this. We don't discuss it tonight, but just so you understand it a little bit better. Why brownfields? Well, there are several really large city-owned parcels, mostly parks, that are mostly landfills or industrial sites with contaminated soils from previous uses that make these areas unsafe for growing food for people. And in the past, this has been a barrier to establishing community gardens in locations like Demitral Field when residents have asked. So why bring it up now? It's on our list of things to do, but it's also the mayor has initiated a conversation this year about looking for places, additional places in this city where people can grow food for people. So why the Food Policy Council? We don't have a Department of Food. So if we want to advance food policy issues, it has to start here. Historically, we have been the ones to advance food policy related issues. And in 2023, the Farmland Preservation Task Force researched this issue of how and whether to grow food on contaminated soils. And we learned that the EPA has guidelines for this. They're the ones who designate brownfields. And so it's in the report, and the task force recommended that the city consider adopting guidelines for city-owned properties where presence or a potential presence of hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants are a concern. So I'm introducing this as new business tonight. We can't discuss it this evening, but it can be taken up at a subsequent meeting. And so, hold your questions for tonight. But the next step will be for the RAFS work group to lead this discussion and process and present more comprehensive information on the topic. And we'll begin the discussion with the Food Policy Council members later this fall. So ideally, a new policy could be adopted in time for the growing season in 2026.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
Any other items of new business? Got a good example from Nan of all the things you could do in a new business? And you can make your own new business now, or next time, or any other time. See no hands though. We'll see you all next time at the next new business. And now we are moving to our special presentation, which is an update on food recovery efforts and healthy food for all.
Take it away, me, I guess, right?
Yeah, go for it. I bet you've been made a host or you've been given the ability to share. So, yeah, just go right ahead and I'll let you field questions
All right, well,
afterwards.
I will apologize. I was asked sort of late in the game to do this presentation. It's a busy month here at Feed Kitchens, where I also work, and I'm a little bit short-staffed, so I don't have a formal presentation to present to you. I don't have a PowerPoint. I'm not real good at those things anyway. So you're just going to have to listen to me and enjoy my soothing voice, I guess. It's made for AM radio, they say.
There we go. I spotlighted you,
Whoa,
Chris.
Chris, on the dish.
Unless
Okay.
that's so uncomfortable, I could remove the spotlight.
Right, so a little so food recovery, a little just a little history. Why was I asked to do this? I am the co-executive director at Northside Planning Council. That puts me in charge of Feed Kitchens, our food business incubator, our bakery, feed bakery and training program. And then we also house Healthy Food for All, food recovery program here, which was started separately by myself and another gentleman in 2015. But then when I came to Feed Kitchens and the Northside Planning Council, we brought Healthy Food for All kind of under the roof of Feed Kitchens, and that's where it has existed for the last 10 years. So we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary. Food Policy Council, Madison Food Policy Council, should take some pride in our 10 years existence, because we started because of a $3,000 seed grant from the city of Madison in 2015. And that is, we started with $3,000 in our pocket and decided in the summer of 2015 that we would try to figure out how to move excess produce from local farms into food pantries and make help more healthy food available to residents of Madison and Dane County. And I think we've certainly, I think we've accomplished that, but there's always more work to be done. So food recovery itself, when I talk about food recovery, I'm talking about generally perishable foods. It could be excess harvest on a farm. It could be prepared food from a restaurant, cafeteria, large or not even large, a catered event, weddings, funerals, conferences, things like that. Also, grocery stores, so deli items from grocery stores, produce items from grocery stores. Generally, don't see a lot of meat, but it could be meat as well. Picking up sort of what trying to save items, feed hungry people with items that are available locally, before and catching them before they get into the landfill. So this body has certainly seen presentations from City of Madison Streets Division, probably Dane County Waste and Renewables, and at some point as well was in on those presentations. But basically, we know that food is the number one input in the Dane County landfill. I didn't have time to pull up the numbers, but I believe that number is right around between 20 and 25% of all inputs to the Dane County landfill is food. Of that food, according to Brian Johnson, City of Madison Streets, 35% of the food that ends up in the landfill is edible food. They've done some waste studies and they figured that. That's literally probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds of potentially food that, if it's in the landfill, decomposes anaerobically and can create methane gas. Now, the Dane County has a project now where they're capturing methane gas from the landfill and they're selling it, putting it directly into pipelines that go through the landfill and selling it to QuikTrip, is my understanding. So there are things that are being done, but there's the biggest thing that can be done and should be done is keeping it from getting to the landfill in the first place. It's kind of a larger statistic for the nation is that 40% of all food that's grown in the United States never gets eaten. 40%. So that's huge. So when we talk about food insecurity, families in need, the need to supply more food resources, potentially the answer is industrial agriculture that can grow more food. How about we just do a better job of taking care of the food that we're already growing and making sure that it gets used and onto families' tables and not ending up in a landfill? When we talk about farms, excess food coming off farms is not necessarily potential food waste, so we have to be careful when we talk about it that it is excess produce that could be put back into the land as compost and a fairly good use of that material. But if I'm a farmer and I've grown that food and I've put my efforts into planning for that growth, buying the seed, buying the inputs, putting that seed in the ground, tending it, and then harvesting it, I want to see somebody eat it. I don't want to throw it now back on the land and plow it in as a soil amendment. And so food recovery is collecting excess food, preventing it from becoming waste before it becomes waste. And I'm sorry, I'm watching myself and I'm moving around like I'm trying to dodge somebody hitting me or something. Food recovery in Dane County has been occurring for since the early 1990s, at least. So back then, there was a group called Wisconsin Harvest that was started, a group of volunteers that decided they needed to do something about collecting excess food. Generally, when I talk to people about excess food or food recovery and they don't know a whole lot about it, the first place they talk about are schools. Oh my God, all the schools are wasting so much food. You got to figure out something to do something about that. It's great that they take an interest. Schools, Josh, present some unique challenges, and certainly it can be done, but that is not the only place where food gets wasted. So food recovery has been happening here since the 1990s. I would say it sort of took on a special meaning in 2008. When we had the financial meltdown crisis at that time, and we were desperately looking for more food resources because we saw food pantry usage skyrocket at that time. At that time, more resources were put into both food recovery and the development of community gardens and what we would call now food pantry gardens. So people that are growing food specifically to donate. That's separate from food recovery, but that sort of happens kind of parallel to food recovery as well. In 2015, then we started Healthy Food for All. Why did we start Healthy Food for All if these other efforts are going on? I was actually at Fair Share CSA Coalition at the time, developing relationships with all these wonderful specialty crop organic farmers around Dane County, around southern and western Wisconsin. And the one thing they said is they have extra food, but they need help figuring out how to get it somewhere. So they're busy on their farm. They want to do something with that food. They couldn't. They needed a system to move that food. Not a knock on Second Harvest or any other agency that was working on these things, but generally on any single farm, their feeling was it wasn't enough necessarily to send trucks out to kind of pick this up. So we decided we would take this on and try to figure out, and that's how we spent that first summer of 2015 moving fresh produce in my Toyota Corolla of all things. But it worked and we did it. At the end of that summer, we were approached by Epic, who hosts the Worldwide Users Group, and they asked us if had heard of our efforts and asked if we would want to take on food recovery for the Worldwide Users Group. 10,000 people being wined and dined for a week, three meals a day plus snacks could end up being a lot of extra food. We hemmed and hawed, but then we decided we had a donor step up and say, "Hey, I will buy all the packaging that you need, all the resources that you need, if you guys can do this and figure it out." So we decided to do it. We spent a week doing it. We recovered and repackaged because things came to us in bulk containers, and we brought volunteers here into feed kitchens where we had commercial kitchen space, repackaged food, and sent it out. We did about 2,600 pounds of food in that week, and we thought that we were kings of the world. We had figured it all out. Now we look at that 2,600 pounds and just kind of laugh at it. The Epic Food Recovery, after that, they called us and we actually went to weekly food recovery with them. They had five cafeterias operating at the time. I don't know what their number is now. But they would collect all the food, excess food from all those cafeterias, and bring it to feed kitchens once a week. And we would have volunteers here and repackage it, label it. They'd give us all the ingredients. So this was high quality food that was going out to food pantries. And community centers and meal sites, so that they could use it. So our focus for Healthy Food for All became sort of the recovery of large quantities of prepared foods, such as Epic or things coming from large cafeterias, because those are hard, difficult things to handle for a food pantry. And we luckily were within feed kitchens, so we were in a commercial kitchen. We could easily triage what we were getting, figure out what to do with it, repackage it if needed, or send it out as is, depending on what it was. And so it was a lot easier for us to deal with that and sort of support food pantries in being able to use that phone. Besides Epic Systems, we worked and continue to work with Memorial Union Catering, Monona Terrace Convention Center, Inn on the Park, the Pyle Center on campus. Lots of other convention spaces will call us. We're constantly trying to twist arms and saying this should be a permanent thing. We kind of call it our green catering initiative, that all catering jobs should have a rider in their contracts that any excess food does not get, that's edible, does not get thrown away. And so we continue to work on that. That's a large part of what we do. The other large part of what we continue to do is the farm pickups. We work extensively with a whole bunch of different farms and pick up food, including Troy Community Farm will call us up. Thank you, Eddie, Nicholas, and all the Troy folks. Wonderful partners will call us up and just say, "Hey, we've got some extra food. We know where their coolers are. We have access to the coolers. They market. We just walk in and grab what they have and gets distributed." Sometimes they direct us where they would like it to go. Sometimes we are free to just take it where we think it needs to go. The one nice thing about what we do is we don't run a food pantry ourselves. So we are neutral in the food pantry world. I think that is an important thing because if food pantries in times of low resources can become very territorial about what they are getting and not be, and rightfully so. I'm getting all these people here. I need this food here. I'm not going to share it with anyone else. So I think, sort of having that as healthy food for all, sort of having that neutral body kind of overarching the system makes a big difference in problem solving, making sure that people aren't stepping on each other's toes, that food is being shared and that resources are going out to the community where they are most needed. Sometimes we are taking things not to food pantries. We're taking things to community centers, low-income senior living sites, so Dryden Terrace here on the north side. We find that to be very important work because, number one, they're very appreciative of the work of the food that we give. Number two, folks are less mobile, so the things that we can bring them may prevent them from having to go visit a food pantry. It may be just the enough resources that they can come down to the lobby. Usually there's a social worker that helps coordinate. We come at a specific time. They know it's going to be there. Sometimes with these large quantities of prepared food, we just bring it in the pans. They all come down with serving spoons and Tupperware dishes and take what they want, take it back to their apartments and eat it. So that's a wonderful way of distributing it that I think also supports the emergency food system in a different way from food pantries. Not that food pantries are extremely important, so I don't want to diminish that. During the pandemic, then things kind of died down. When the pandemic first hit, we got so many calls, we were just overwhelmed with the amount of food. So think of all the restaurants that were now shutting down with a cooler full of food. Hey, Chris, you want to come and empty out our cooler? We're not doing anything anymore. So tons of food. We actually ran Feed to Go at the time through Feed Kitchen. So we were hired chefs here at Feed Kitchens, prepared 600 hot meals a day that all got plated and sent out into the community. Healthy Food for All became a partner in that in supplying ingredients that we were collecting from these restaurants and other places, of course. And then places like Bill Warner Snughaven Farm made sure that we always had spinach to to put in those meals as well. But the pandemic also changed the system a little bit. So people were, there was less food to be rescued, certainly recovered from grocery stores, restaurants. Those places just weren't doing it. There weren't big conventions going on in person. So, our prepared food recovery kind of took a dive. We started focusing more on kind of the fresh produce part of it. Pandemic ended. We were doing our business. We got a call in 2023 that Community Action Coalition, I used to run the Food and Gardens Division at Community Action Coalition, and they had a program called the CAC Gleaners. The CAC Gleaners was the previous, when I talked about Wisconsin Harvest and food recovery happening since the 90s, that was the same program. So Wisconsin Harvest moved to CAC, became the CAC Gleaners, and then operated there from the early 2000s until 2023, when the CAC board decided we're not going to operate this program anymore. So long-running program that was very successful was just dropped. So 10 years after I was working at CAC, I don't know how people still had my phone number or knew where I was, but volunteers for that program called me up and just were livid. This has to exist. You got to do something about this, Chris. So we approached CAC, talked to them. We decided at Healthy Food for All that we would take on that program and not let it go away. Obviously, we don't call it CAC Gleaners anymore. We call it the Retail Food Recovery Network. And what that program is, and it still exists and operates today, is a volunteer-driven food recovery effort that currently has 27 volunteers who drive regular routes on a daily basis. They are assigned a route. So it might be a route that goes from You pick up at Metcalf's Hilldale on Monday morning. You're going to get produce. You're going to get deli items. Those items are going to go to Catholic Multicultural Center. They're going to be expecting you to show up with them. So it's a very prescriptive, assigned pickup and delivery. It's wonderful. The volunteers create great relationships with both the donor and with the agency, and they just love it. And for their part, then we support what they do. If they have issues with the vendor, if they have issues with the agency, we will help smooth that over. If they can't drive a route, we will either do it for them or find a substitute to do it. Most of these folks are retirees, because they have the time during the day to drive these routes. So things like, we're going to Arizona for the winter. I'm having a knee replacement. Are very common sort of reasons that we need to find substitutes, and that would be sort of long-term substitutes. But the program operates. They, like I said, they're doing 27 volunteers who, 7 days a week are driving regular routes. When we made that transition from CAC to Northside Planning Council and under Feed Kitchens, there was also some work that was done then with Second Harvest Food Bank. Some of the donors that were part of the original Wisconsin Harvest, CAC Gleaners, were national chains. And certainly the grocery store chain, the grocery store ownership changes all the time. And so some of those national chains had agreements with Second Harvest that Second Harvest would oversee the food recovery that was happening there. And so we had to sit down with Second Harvest and kind of do kind of sorting out who's doing what. Oh, Pick and Save is now owned by Kroger's. You guys have the relationship with the Kroger's. We're going to hand this set of volunteers. Not an easy task to tell a volunteer we're going to trade you to a different organization. But it worked out. It there were some bumps, but it worked out, and now and the program continues. To say that, so the retail food network that we now oversee is not the only food recovery that happens in Madison or Dane County. Certainly Second Harvest is overseeing some of that. Second Harvest is also pulling stuff not just from Pick and Save, but Walmart, and I can't name them all, but there's a bunch of them. And all individual pantries, not all individual pantries, but probably most individual pantries have some sort of gleaning or food recovery relationship with a store that's near them, a bodega that's near them, a convenience store, a bakery, somebody that's supplying food that's a good neighbor to the food pantry. And that relationship is a direct relationship that does not occur between Healthy Food for All or Second Harvest. It's just a relationship with the food pantry and that vendor. So knowing that it's kind of a scattered system, it's hard to say exactly how many pounds of food are being recovered. But I can tell you, if we think that there's millions of pounds of food going into the Dane County landfill, I'm pretty sure we are not recovering even a very large percentage of that. Healthy Food for All on any given year, pre taking over the CAC Gleaners program, was probably doing about 250,000 pounds of fresh produce and perishable foods. With the Gleaners or the food recovery network now, that number is over 1 million pounds. One of the problems we have is getting our volunteers to report it to us. Not so much accurately, but timely. And so we're a little bit behind on reports, so I can't be hard pressed to give you an exact number right at this moment. But a lot of food is being recovered. And it's not just Healthy Food for All. It's not just Second Harvest. It's the individual pantries as well. But I think that sort of demonstrates that it's even more important that we have kind of some overarching view that's neutral of the system that can help smooth things out. For instance, we food pantry usage is going up again. Here we go. And so food pantries are going to be and are looking for as many resources as they can possibly get. We have some food pantries that are large and well staffed and well resourced and who do a lot of food recovery already, who may decide we need to do more food recovery, right? And then reach out to vendors and see if they can get donations. What those food pantries may not know is those vendors may already have relationships. And so stepping into some of these things can be a bit of a minefield. And it's just nice to be able to coordinate that, to be able to kind of help people out, to smooth things over when things get a little rough between food pantries. And it does happen. Although people get along pretty well. The other reality that people should be aware of for Madison-Dane County is that United Way used to fund something called the Dane County Food Pantry Network. That network was overseen by CAC, and it was basically all food pantries in Dane County could come together, talk about issues, talk about the way they do business, and we could also sort of push new objectives or new ways of doing business. So during the time that the food pantry network existed, you saw food pantries move from one visit every 30 days to come anytime you need food. That was a big change. That happened in the mid 2000s, right around that time of the financial meltdown when people realized needed food. That was a big change because volunteers thought, oh my God, people are going to steal us blind. We'll never have enough food. What really happened was people showed up to the food pantry. They got what they needed for a week. Oh, I'm making this dinner. I need this one item. Let me go back to the food pantry and see if they have it. That's generally the way it occurs. People aren't going to the food pantry and taking bags and bags and bags of food out on a daily basis. As we move now into the world that we're going to be living in, and I hate to say our food system is going to be taking a big hit. It's already taking a big hit. Produce prices, wholesale prices up 40% at the end of last week. So it's going to become really important that we move as much food as possible. Healthy Food for All itself, having been started by the SEED grant from Dane County, we are now, or from City of Madison, sorry, City of Madison. We are funded by Dane County. So Dane County gives us a through UW through the extension, gives us an annual contract and a lease on a van. So we can move food. Their idea is we want to try to keep as much food out of the landfill as possible. This is a simple way of doing it. We also want to try to feed hungry people. And so you guys can do it. We're also tasked through that contract then to do community education and kind of that higher level coordination with food pantries. Although they don't all get the memo, so sometimes they're like, why are you doing this? Luckily for me, I've been in the system since the early 2000s as well. And just to be a little immodest here, people sort of know who I am, respect what I do, and can kind of listen to what I have to say versus, hey, who's this guy coming in and telling us stuff? So this summer, we have been more focused on sort of the farmers market collection. So one of the things that went away with CAC was not just the Gleaners program, but also Dane County Farmers Market food recovery. Pandemic sort of kind of wrecked that for a while, but then after the pandemic, that was never picked back up again. That literally was thousands of pounds every Saturday that could be picked up. And people say, well, it's stuff that farmers couldn't take home and sell the next day. Yeah, lettuce, spinach, chard, you name it, needs to be moved out quickly. But the reality is, on any given Saturday of the day, we now do the Dane County Farmers Market through Healthy Food for All. We get honey bears, we get frozen meat, we get maple syrup, we get cheese. So these are things, obviously, that the farmers do not have to take home with them, but I think if anybody understands a hard day's work and getting nothing at the end of the day, a farmer understands that, and they are very generous with their time. We're also making sure that other markets are recovered. So we personally are doing the East Side Farmers Market and the North Side Farmers Market, West Side Farmers Market, in collecting at all those, and then making sure that there's a food pantry at other farmers market that's assigned to pick that up and that it is happening. The other thing we're doing at farmers markets is we are tabling at some farmers markets, and we are encouraging customers at those farmers markets to buy one for the, we call it buy one for the neighbor. So if you're buying a bag of carrots, buy two bag of carrots and donate one of them. That has become a very popular program. People love it. It actually puts us in good standing with the farmers too, because they love it, because not only are they donating stuff, but they're being paid to for some of those donations as well. And so that works out really well. West Side Community Farmers Market tends to be the most successful. I don't know what it is about that farmers market particularly, but people are very generous there. A lot of times when we're tabling, people will just walk up with a $20 bill or a $50 bill and just say, "Hey, go buy what you think people need." So they just go to a farmer and say, "Give me $50 worth of whatever it is." Not Colorado generally. So that is that. Along with that, we have also been doing a couple of events that we're calling buy out the market. So that's encouraging people not just to buy one for the neighbor, but to show up at that market and buy everything at that market. And then we will collect it and make sure it gets donated. Why are we doing that? Because what happened last winter, all those farmers had growing contracts for produce donations for the local food purchasing program. All those contracts were pulled. They already had seed purchased, possibly seed in the ground. That was money that they thought was in the bank already, and it got taken away from them. And so we just felt like, besides feeding hungry people, we got to support the farmers who have been supporting us. And so this is the way that we are trying to do that. Trying to think if I forgot anything. That's a basic overview. Any questions? Someone's gonna have to call on people because I'm not sure if I know how
I can call. Yes.
Thank you,
Oh,
Nicholas.
you go, Josh.
Thanks, Chris. I'm wondering how that thank you for all the information. That was a huge amount of information to present in that fashion. Really interesting. I wanted to know how vendors, restaurants, purveyors of prepared foods kind of manage or on your side manage the question of food safety. So I'm going to take a catering job because you mentioned that a couple times. Catering job, we have some prepared foods in there's a lot left over. And I've worked catering too in my restaurant years. And sometimes you have situations where there's a lot of really great temperature control, and sometimes you don't. It's kind of like there's a platter of ham and cheese or shrimp, and it's been sitting out for a while. And now there's a lot, left over, and it's food that could be saved. But how do you manage this with the vendors of those prepared foods and on your side to make sure that when you take in foods and redistribute that is done safely?
So we definitely have our own protocols. So one thing we will not do is we will not take food off of a buffet table or a chafing dish, right? So this is food that has been prepared, has been waiting to be put out to be served, but has not been put out yet. That's important because there are donors who will say, will show up and they'll show us the buffet table and say, "There you go, pack it up, it's yours." Nope. We're not taking that. That's just not going to happen. So one is before the event even happens, hopefully we get a call, right? Sometimes you get the call after the event, "Hey, people didn't show up and we have all this food." But hopefully you get the call before the event, or it's folks that you already have a relationship with and they understand what your needs are. One is we need it cooled down for us to be able to take it. We will bring thermometers and we will check it to make sure. We have transport, Cambros and ways of transporting it to keep it cool. The nice thing about this city, it ain't so big that you don't get somewhere stuff isn't going to be sitting in a vehicle for 4 hours, 6 hours. It's 10, 20 minutes and boom, we got it in a cooler. But we do our best to make sure it stays cool while it's being transported as well. The other thing is that we're in feed kitchen. So we're in a commercial kitchen, much safer to handle it here than it would be at a food pantry. Some food pantries have kitchens. Most food pantries do not have if they have a kitchen, it probably is not a kitchen that could be licensed as a commercial kitchen. The last thing that we do that's important for vendors to know is that there is something called the Emerson Good Samaritan Law that indemnifies donors who donate in good faith, that they cannot be sued if for harm that's caused by that food, as long as the food is donated to people in need and given away for free. And so, that is probably the number one question that we get from donors. Is I don't want to be sued, so I ain't giving you anything. I mean, I've been doing food recovery stuff since 2004 myself, in various ways. I've never had a problem with anyone complaining about getting sick from the food. But you also had to be careful. You can't, we also have little, well, don't want to pick on little old ladies, but wonderful, helpful little old ladies who will show up at the door of feed kitchens with their ham bone from Christmas and say, "I'm sure somebody can make ham, a really good ham soup out of this bone. Will you take it?" And so we do, and then we throw it away. Next question.
Nan and then Noah. Nan, you're muted, so. Nan, you're still muted.
Same. Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Thanks, Chris, for this, really, really great background on what you all have been doing. I'm so happy to hear this all kind of pulled together and across, the years that you and I have been working together, but not always on this particular topic. So, and then two comments. One is the buy off the market was incredibly effective during like the demonstrations that were downtown. So I thought that was a brilliant strategy.
Well, we got involved by accident. So that was called for nationally, and there was nobody locally that was coordinating it. And so the market was very afraid that all these people are going to descend on the market with no plan. Right. So we jumped in
Well,
at the last minute. City of Madison Streets and police and State Capitol Police all worked really well with us to make it happen.
It would, and I mean, at the time that I was around, it was very effective. I did liberate some spinach and chard from Bill Warner on my way home. But
Nice.
anyway, the other thing I would just ask is, you didn't go through a whole list of the major food, sites that are commercial, corporations basically that you work with. But I learned from friends I was visiting out west that they make regular runs to Costco. Is Costco on the local list?
So Costco does not donate through us, but I believe either through Second Harvest and or I know that Wayford Resources in the past has gotten large pallets of stuff from Costco because they've called us and we've actually helped redistribute it. Things like, oh, we got a whole pallet of blueberries or something, and
Right. Yeah, that's what my friend said. They make regular trips to their Costco is in Seattle and aren't, depending on what's available, they decide where they're going. So there's clearly a system there, but I hadn't heard Costco mentioned here, so I just thought I would bring it up. I'm glad, it doesn't matter really who's in that loop as long as
right,
that
as long as it's looped
stuff
in.
is not being wasted. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Chris, thanks for the presentation. I got a couple questions. My first question is if you're aware of any organization or if you guys, I know you do the retail gleaning, but is anybody doing farm gleaning?
So we do, we will pick up from a farm. When we first started in 2015, we actually would go out to farms with volunteers and glean or harvest off the farm. We did that for about 2 years, and I wouldn't say that I think most farmers sort of came to the conclusion that they would rather pick it and give it to us than have us having a bunch of oddball people running around their farm picking stuff.
Cool.
I don't think we picked anything that was we weren't supposed to, but when you got 20 people running around your farm, and it's like can make you a little nervous.
That makes
Oh,
sense.
don't pick that.
Cool. Okay, that's helpful. Don't want to repeat mistakes. And my other question was, I've been talking with Ben Stanger at Greenbox quite a bit, and he's really interested in using his distribution fleet to pick up food and donate that food. And specifically, he's got contracts at the Madison Terrace or the Monona Terrace, sorry, and Epic. And is curious of like how he can collaborate and fit into work that's already been done. I don't know if you've already talked to him
Yeah,
about that or
I have
not.
not talked to him. That
Okay.
would be difficult. Mono Terrace still donates. Epic still donates. I should have said that Epic now, that is not through Healthy Food for All anymore. That has been handed off to Badger Prairie Needs Network, which makes a lot of sense. It's just a mile or two from their facility, and they have the county has put a lot of money into improving that facility. They should be using that for those things. So they now handle Epic. Badger Prairie Needs Network, but some of that food still gets out into the rest of the system. I would be a little worried about Greenbox just because based on Josh's point, which is food safety, right? He's got a truck that's picking up food waste and dumping it into whatever his dumpster, his hopper, whatever he has. Where is he gonna what how is he gonna handle prepared foods that need to be kept cold? It's worth a discussion, but I don't know how that happens necessarily.
Cool. Happy
The
to.
one nice relationship that we do have is with public health, who now when they go on licensing, they have to license all and inspect all food establishments, right? So they are trained to talk about food recovery programs and to make sure that people are aware that there are ways of moving food that isn't just throwing it out. And generally, when we get calls from donors who want to start with the program, it's not coming from management, it's coming from line staff. I'm being asked to throw this out. It makes me feel bad. And can you help us do something about it? That's generally how the conversation starts.
Cool. Thanks, Chris.
Hattie and then Devika.
Thanks. Great. Job, Chris. I was going to just start by saying one of the perks pre-pandemic of being on the Dane County Food Policy Council was coming into fresh spinach from Bill and Snughaven
Yes.
Farms. So I miss those days. That was a great perk. I just was, you kind of answered my question when you were answering Noah, but I was just remembering when pre-pandemic, the community, us as a community center at Badger Rock, we were able to go to CAC to get the food from Epic, which would be in like big metal containers, and we'd be able to glean that food, put it in our freezer, and then serve that as part of our free community dinner that we have once a month at the neighborhood center. And so I was trying to track down where that food went after, everything kind of fell apart, and just learned last year that B Badger Prairie was in charge of that system, but I guess they break it down into more like individual.
Yeah, kind of like we used to do, but I would assume that they have enough that they could keep some in pans and just let you take it. But
Yeah, I
that's not
didn't
my call,
get
so.
any success there, but just keep in mind if you do know of any place, and Noah, you as well, I guess, if you're as we've because I know we're talking more about food access and also food saving food, that there are probably other neighborhood centers. We fortunately
Yep,
have a
we
freezer,
can.
thanks to Josh. So
We could probably put you on a list, and
that'd be great.
if you have a freezer, then it's not stuff necessarily you have to worry about, like, can you use this right now?
Yeah, no, we actually have a freezer because the school district is kind
Yeah,
and
I mean,
makes sure.
we get oddball stuff. We got a call from Lone Rock, the tortilla maker out there. Freezer went down. Hey, can you come out to Lone Rock and get all the tortillas out here? We get a call from Athens Grill out on Highway M. They make gyros. They sometimes have a lot of excess gyro meat. I don't know how they end up. Must be the end of the night kind of stuff, and they put it in the freezer. And every once in a while, we get it. Piles of gyro meat.
We'll keep us in mind at Badger Rock. Thanks.
Sure.
Devika.
Thanks, Chris. Great to hear the updates and always interesting to hear kind of your side of the story about what's going on in this space. So yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking about a couple of things. So one is you mentioned it would be nice to have an overarching neutral view of the system.
Right.
How close are we to that? Do you think we could have a more coordinated or collaborative effort in the retail recovery space in Dane County? And what would that look like? Do we need like a landscape scan, a community of practice? Like, how could we better make sure we're getting the food that's out there more effectively, keeping it out of the landfill, getting it to people who need it, and filling the gaps and whatnot and being equitable and all of that. So that's my first question. And then I
Can I
had
answer that
another.
right now? So I think that's a great question. And actually, we started working on that pre-pandemic. We had some community, I would call them community meetings, food pantry meetings, or interested party meetings, people coming together to talk about those very things. I will say that food pantries are always very wary about attending and what are you asking me to do? And what, I think I got a couple of comments like, why are you trying to take our food away? I'm not trying to take anyone's food away. I'm just trying to make sure the it's coordinated. So I think Devika, if Second Harvest and us, and maybe, I don't know if it's United Way or who works together to sort of send that message out, like, let's coordinate better, especially given the the times we find ourselves in. I think people are open to it. It fell apart for us because of the pandemic. I will say it publicly, it fell apart a little bit because of the efforts of Little John's. He sucked a lot of air out of the room for food recovery folks, and I think the system is still recovering a little bit from that, to be perfectly honest with you.
Are you currently in contact with someone at Second Harvest? I know our relationship has changed.
Yeah, we have.
Sorry, this is a more of a
Right.
water cooler
Unless
question, but
people left there that I'm not aware of, yes, we have. Yeah,
okay.
we worked pretty closely during the pandemic. Part of what we did was go over to Second Harvest and help move stuff out of the cubes. That was kind of that one-off sort of stuff. Like, pantries are handing out packaged goods. If you have sort of this one-off stuff that's coming from a restaurant or something that you can't give to everybody, or who do I give this? I've got, three deli containers of cut cantaloupe. Who gets the cut cantaloupe? We would take all those things and help distribute it. We don't do that anymore, obviously, post-pandemic, but I think we've got a great relationship with Second Harvest. It's just, it's a different model of business. We call ourselves the street gorillas. You guys are the corporate warlords, so. In very
With our
simple
fancy
terms.
contracts with
That's right,
Walmart and Costco.
exactly. That's just our shop talk here to make ourselves feel good to what
Yeah,
we
no,
do.
you have a very important niche in this, but that's why I feel like having that landscape scan, that like overarching view of the system would be useful to see where are the gaps. Where
Right.
is there like a ton of resources? Some places I think probably have a lot of resources and some are being missed. So Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who. I feel like we've talked about this in this group before about such a landscape scan, maybe not just retail recovery, but even in sort of like, I don't know, food access or something. But yeah, so I don't know who pushes that forward or how exactly, but it sounds like it's good to know that you also feel like there's a need for that. Maybe that's the first step. I don't know. So if anyone else has thoughts, but then I think I had two other quick things. One is, do you keep statistics on the farmers market pounds that you either get donated or the buy one for a neighbor? Because we also do some purchasing from
Yep,
the
you do the
Wednesday farmers
Wednesday,
market.
right?
Yep. And so it'd be kind of neat to see how much money are we putting back into our local growers.
Sure.
And that could be kind of a neat way to, I don't know, convince somebody about something in somewhere.
Yep, they'll hear down the line.
So that would be kind of interesting. Maybe we can both bring our stats to a meeting and share or something. And then the last thing is just for Noah about the Ben Stranger Green Box thing. We at Second Harvest are often looking for volunteer drivers to do such retail recovery connections for partners, especially those that don't have their own transportation. And oftentimes, I mean, we do need the refrigerated space, but sometimes there's retail pickups that are non-perishable. So maybe looking into also connecting with someone at Second, if Ben wants to connect to someone at Second Harvest, maybe that's another place he could look.
Great. That's awesome. Just if I can quickly plug, we do have our food resource management committee through Dane County Food Collective. Next week, I can maybe like send out an email with you all on that with an invite. And I know Ben will be stopping by to talk about what he's thinking about and just seeing where collaborations can exist.
Oh, and just since you're on, Noah, speaking about the like sort of whatever landscape scan or whatever, I don't know if that's a food plan like recommendation, possibly. I don't know if that's a place for it, but just an idea.
And can you just elaborate on what you mean by the scan?
Yeah, I don't know if this is the right place for this, but like just especially in the retail recovery space, trying to do that overarching view of like, where are we picking up from? Where are we not picking up from? Who's getting it? Who's doing the coordinating? And how can we fill in the gaps? Because, like Chris was saying, like we're getting a lot of retail recovery from Dane County, but there's probably a large portion that we're not, that's still, that we could still tap into.
Can
So.
I take up some space to answer that? Is that okay with folks? We're working with, or we applied for a grant with, his name's Patrick Lagman, who's got an app called Maize, Maize, that currently is just for connecting consumers to local food, but we're working on him to build out a online marketplace for purchasing food, local food specifically as well. And we've talked about sort of at length what it would look like to also include like food recovery onto that as well. So people could post available food options on that site and like locations where to pick it up, as well as like sort of purchasing.
Is
I'm sorry, go
an
ahead.
analysis of what's currently happening, or like a survey of what's currently happening with food recovery, going to be in the food plan, though?
No. Unless
Okay.
like that data can come together on its own. I guess what I'm proposing here is like I think we would need a space to put that data into or collect that data, which if we can do that between now and by the time the food plan is written, it can be featured in the food plan. I don't know how organized that data currently is, Chris and Devika, if that
Well,
exists.
I guess what I'm saying is like, not that it would be included in the food plan, but it would be a recommendation of the food
Sure.
plan to pursue such
Absolutely.
a committee or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And our data is a little messy right now, to be honest, and we're in the process of trying to better understand how many donors do we have, how many recipients, how many things like that. So.
I think recommendation, the answer is absolutely. And then what I was getting at is sort of like there needs to be a centralized place where that data can be uploaded into in order to have that scan. And so we're talking about working on it, but it's not currently in the works.
Kelsey, you can go next. I do want to say that having a recommendation to do that doesn't even need to wait for the food plan. It can just be a new business on the Food Policy Council. Kelsey.
Yeah, you read my mind. A question that I had for you, Chris. First, thank you so much for the work that you do and the coordination that you do. Collaborating with lots of different entities is hard work and taxing. So I think I speak for all of us when we say thank you. deeply thank you.
Thank you.
But my question is...
Why I don't have any hair. That's...
My question is if there has been any mid-tier connections through food hubs in terms of gleaning food for potential seconds markets. There's a lot of food from farmers and producers that doesn't ever make it into kitchens because it doesn't meet grading quality for lots of different entities, whether that's cafeterias, healthcare facilities, childcare facilities, et cetera. But I'm wondering if there is any visibility from the work that you're doing at the grassroots level into some of the potential mid-tier rescue opportunities.
So I would say right now, probably not. Maybe Devika can speak to if they work with anyone. You know, years ago, I used to work with Lofredo Produce quite a bit, and they would donate a fair amount of produce. But I don't know of anything that's coming out of any currently out of any warehouses. Occasionally, Golden Produce will bring stuff here because they deliver to a lot of different feed vendors who purchase through them. So they will drop off things here for us that they have in excess. But I think when you look at kind of the future plans of whatever is happening with CAC and the big cooler, I'm sorry I missed that meeting, so I didn't I don't know exactly where they're at with that, but I think some of that plan and some of the work that Rebecca Kimball's doing as well is sort of looking at food warehousing and then food warehousing and local food hubs having a way to move donated food or seconds as well as just being a marketplace for farmers and processors.
Great. Thank you.
So Devika, I don't know if you'd put your hand down or not. I will say two more things quickly.
Okay.
Just for this Food Policy Council. One is City of Madison Streets Division has a wonderful food scraps website, or on their website, they have a whole couple pages that are dedicated to food scraps, food waste, what to do with it, how to use it, how to repurpose it, where should it go? And so take a look at that because they're actually doing some pretty good work. They also have the Emerson Good Samaritan Act language right on that website. Also, I think recent movement has been towards taking care of food waste. So you're seeing, the contract with Sustain Dane to do collection at farmers markets. You're seeing the county putting up 5 kiosks throughout the county where people can drop off food waste. I also coordinate a community garden. So community gardens are also getting their arm twisted to be maybe hosting community compost sites. I can tell you in my community garden over my dead body, but simply because food waste compost and gardens, you're attracting varmints, and I don't think you want to do that at a community garden. But if you're doing it right, that wouldn't happen. But if it's a community space that's really not being overseen by anybody, that can create problems. But anyway, there's a lot of work that is being done on diverting actual food waste and keeping that out of the landfill as well.
I got one quick question. You talked about sort of a rider in contracts for minimizing food waste. And I'm wondering if you'd be able to share the template for that with everyone. I don't know if it's something that could get put into regulations because it seems less enforceable and more like, but it does seem like a good sort of best practices type thing. But
certainly any contract that a caterer does with a client could have, and a lot of clients, younger people these days, demand it. So we're seeing a lot of We're doing a lot of pickups at weddings because young couples take an interest in our food system more than we did when we were that age, and they don't want to see that food being wasted. So they understand that, and they will demand that the caterer not throw out their food. But yes, I can find that language and share it.
Thanks, Chris. Any other questions?
Chair, I think Devika did have.
Okay. Devika, sorry. Carry on with your remaining questions.
Sorry, that was, I just wanted to make a comment to Kelsey's question, which is like, I think Second Harvest are barriers for some of that like produce or even just donated food in general is the ability to do that minimal processing, but also just the working of the donated food. If it comes in bulk, if it comes often to us in basically not family, what we call family ready portions or packaging. So that's our biggest barrier there. And so, yeah, hopefully some of these like food shed thingies and stuff will help with that processing piece of it.
Well, I just want to thank everybody. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for listening to me. I think this was supposed to be a 15-minute presentation, and I think I went over.
Thanks, Chris. I think we went over with discussion because it was useful. So, yeah, thanks for your time and attention of this before, now, and in the future. It's me. No major updates today. We have a couple people on their way in to becoming members. And again, if anyone's interested in becoming a member, they can reach out to me or Nick Heckman. It'll shepherd them through the process. That's me. Regional food system planning.
Hey everyone. Just a quick update. We're sort of coming to the tail end of our community engagement phase of the food plan. We've had some really exciting events over the last month, including town halls, farmer panel, focus groups, and continuing the surveys and interviews that we've been doing to inform the food plan. So that's been going really well. We have two upcoming events that are open to the public and will be spaces, both one is more for collaboration and one is more for reporting out on the project. So we have the Food and Faith Summit on September 11th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Mount Zion Baptist Church. And this is looking to get people from the emergency food space and faith leaders in the same room together to talk about efforts to feeding food insecure folks in our community. So excited about that one. I can, again, send out information always. Or at this time, I hope you're all subscribe to the food plan newsletter to see updates about that kind of stuff. And then
send it to Nick so that it can go into the public record.
Got it. And September 27th, we have the harvest gathering out at Yawela Farms in Stoughton. That'll sort of be our last public town hall discussion, talking about what we're seeing in the food plan and getting public reaction before we start the writing process. So that sort of wraps up our community engagement phase. And then we'll head more into summarizing all that input that we've been getting into a writing process that will begin in October. And we'll still do probably some reporting out in public events during that period. But that's sort of wrapping up that phase and moving into the writing portion of the food plan. Happy to take any questions on that too.
Thanks, Noah. Any questions? Yeah, I'll comment that I'm excited for the next phase. Regional ag and food sovereignty. No major updates there. I think we spent our meeting, and I think we'll spend our next meeting talking about that new business Nan brought up. Sort of figuring out details to share next month. So I'll I'll assume there's no questions unless someone really pops up with a hand real quick. And we can move to the Dedane Food Access Network, which.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Hey. All right. Thanks, everyone. And just briefly, Dane Food Access Network has continued to meet difficult couple months for folks who are in the food access space. Conversations have been around some of the new policy challenges that agencies are feeling, the lack and struggle with resources that Chris described in some ways regarding the pantries and their challenges to feed folks. And the loss of key nutrition program in SNAP Ed that has hit our community and communities across the country. So Dane County does have a few nutrition educators who will remain employed after October through the expanded food and nutrition education program. That's FNEP, which is a separate nutrition ed program, but we're losing a handful of really talented nutrition educators in short order, which is a travesty, frankly. So I'll also just add lastly that, the Dane Food Access Network has kind of served a few different functions over the course of the years since the pandemic. In one way, it's kind of a space where people can connect and talk through challenges, joint challenges and collective ideas for generative conversations around food access. And in another way, I think it's kind of a spiritual continuation of the food pantry network that Chris mentioned. So I do encourage you all are invited and welcome. If you don't have an invitation in your inbox, please contact me. I can get you so that you're able to sign into those meetings. And yeah, I think, and attend as you're able to. It's not something you need to feel formal about, but I would like to think there's some value we can add in that, just in that conversation that some of you are asking for. And I'll pass it off there.
Thanks, Nick. Any questions there? Anything from the Farmland Preservation Task Force?
Well, I'm not going to talk any more about new business because that's for a future meeting. But it is encouraging to know that staff is moving ahead with conversations with the farmers who have been leasing the city's agricultural lands. And their goal is to have those conversations this month so that they can put the updated lease language into the legislative process in September. And with any luck, have it be completed by October so that the farmers who are signing up for city-owned lands in 2026 understand the new provisions, which frankly are not as new as the farmers think. The Dane County has been requiring the same things for a long time, but it's an upgrade for the city's leases, and it's moving forward apace. So that's a good report.
Thanks, Dan. Josh, anything from the school district?
I think Josh had to step off, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Well, if he pops back on, I'll go out of order, but for now, we'll go to the Double Dollars program.
Yeah, I think the update from last month remains the case. Double Dollars should be able to wrap up its summer summer market season in 2025 without concern. But there's going to be some big funding question marks for 2026, and I think those conversations will definitely have to come to this space over the coming months as city and county budgets are forming. So, stay tuned.
Stick. I guess I have a question. Do you think that the Food Policy Council is a good venue for making suggestions about the city budgets for how much double dollar funding there should be?
That's an interesting question. I would turn to Alder Evers and see if he has any input in that question.
I don't have any update on that regard at all. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe my thought, Nicholas, would be the Food Policy Council definitely has historically developed some of the programs that we talk about today, including healthy retail, seed grants. Dane County, as Chris indicated, has been integrally involved in funding for food systems as well in different spaces. I think when you look at across all the city and county departments, there's a number of different pockets of food system programming that are in different places. And so it's going to be an interesting coming few years where I think those priorities need to be put under greater scrutiny. So, but potentially the Food Council could have an opportunity to advocate.
Alder Avers, you can jump in again.
Well, you know, if there are recommendations for the budget, this is the time now. I you know, it's a bit late in the process, but there's still an opportunity to put requests forward. So if any of you have suggestions for the city budget in terms of, you know, operating costs or grants or things like that, let me know and I'll try to funnel those requests in the appropriate direction.
I think it's too late for a recommendation because it would have been a new business now last month, but I'll say my comment is I would like more dollars funding in operating costs. And that's a comment on the double dollars program. Just me personally.
Whether it's new business or not, you can always email me at district13@cityofmadison.com with your requests and recommendations.
Thanks, Alder Avers. Okay. Community gardens, just actually no major updates for it's summer. Food system assessment staff reports.
No updates on food system assessments.
Okay. You know about business development specialist? Nick?
Yeah, actually I can handle all three of our staff reports. I think extension and our business development updates are things are status quo and nothing major to report. Public health, we have I guess I'll echo that. Things are pretty quiet for the time being, which is good news.
No measles.
There have been a couple measles cases identified in the state of Wisconsin. Thanks for asking, but nothing has yet been connected to Dane County.
Nice. Okay. Announcements before we adjourn. See no hands for announcements. Can I get a hand for a motion to adjourn? Hetty? And anyone want a second? Lindsay Day Farnsworth. That's a second. I will assume unanimous consent on adjournment unless I see a third hand asking for a roll call vote. And seeing no third hand, we are adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone.